Hello, and welcome to the Harassment-Free Workplace Podcast. I'm April Thoreau of Navigating Integrity Associates. This podcast is for CEOs and HR professionals of small and medium-sized businesses to learn practical suggestions that can be used right away to address harassment in the workplace. We are committed to creating workplaces that work for everyone. Welcome. Hello and welcome to the Harassment Free Workplace Podcast. I'm your host, April Thoreau, and welcome back to season two. So excited that we've made it to season two. Thank you to all of the listeners for making season one such a success. Please let all your friends know about us, know that we're back. And I am so, so excited about who we have with us today. Today we have Dr. Betty Pries. How are you?
I am just fine, and it's great to be here.
Good. I'm just going to read your bio to introduce you to our audience so they know who you are. So with over 28 years of experience coaching, mediating, training, facilitating, and consulting, Betty is highly regarded as a conflict change and leadership specialist. Betty specializes in working with complex challenges, supporting leaders in their organizations to be at their best. Betty's capacity to care deeply, listen well, and provide wise and thoughtful support allows to help her clients engage in tough, meaningful, and important conversations, set directions, and achieve positive organizational change. Welcome, Dr. Betty.
It's good to be here. Good to be here, April.
Yeah. So tell me more about you and the organizational change that you provide for your clients.
So I began this work in 1993 and have been working in the area of conflict, organizational health, conflict health, communication, change, and so forth since that time. I love what I do, and it is not without its challenges, because everything I do is enter into systems and into workplaces and so forth where people are experiencing challenges. One of my greatest areas of joy is working with leaders and helping leaders to really be at their best, to really shine, and through their ability to shine, helping the whole system to shine. So sometimes that includes people calling us to say, we have conflict, what do we do? Or we have harassment, what do we do? And those are sometimes twinned. And sometimes when we walk into workplaces, the presenting issue might be conflict, but behind that, there might be a vision that's not clear, or a structure that's not working, or policies that are getting people stuck. And so as a result of that, my work has grown from specifically dealing with conflict when I was a young person. Now it's conflict and it's all of that other stuff. It's around organizational health generally. It's around policies, around structure, around leadership skills, around team dynamics, around strategic planning. So when I was 23 and began in this field, everything we did was through the lens of conflict. And after a few months, maybe a few years of doing that, I realized really, really quickly, we can't solve the conflict problems without solving the systems problems. And so we need to work at multiple levels in order for organizations to be healthy.
Oh, it's so true. And I find that the larger the organization, the more difficult it is to get that boat to turn.
Oh, yes. it's much harder to be nimble, right? Mm-hmm. Have a very large organization. And so then the question becomes, who is the change agent in this system? Whether it's a small system or a large one, it's so valuable to think about not who is the problem, but who can be an agent of transformation and change in this situation. And frequently it's people in leadership, which is why my work has increasingly turned to how are we as leaders doing, and how can we be at our best as leaders?
Well, it's so important you say that, because really, I've said it before on the podcast as well, is that leadership really sets the tone, right? Like there's that old saying, the fish stinks from the head down, right? So it's like, I don't know where that comes from, but it's like, if the leadership is really on board and making sure the culture is healthy and organization is healthy and everything is healthy, then it really trickles down. But if there's something out of integrity at the top, it also trickles down and makes big issues.
It trickles down. And in a way, it's also the thing that I think has surprised me. It's an insight, aha, I had a couple of years ago, is that if people were to wear like responsibility for themselves, like a coat. If I had a coat on and that coat represented my responsibility for my behavior, what has amazed me is how people sort of take off that coat and hang it on the wall when they enter the workplace or a team or a unit. Mm-hmm. And then they look at the leader and they model their behavior after their leader. Now, not everybody does this. Not every, you know, employee's bad behavior is the leader's fault, but there's something about the culture that we create as leaders or the energy that we bring into the system as leaders that people tend to model themselves after their leaders. That could be bad news, but it could also be good news. Mm-hmm. In the sense that as leaders, if you can be in your system with significant integrity and significant leadership capacity, you do have the capacity to turn that ship, mm-hmm. if even only for your department.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so great to know. So great. Okay, so let's talk about, in the podcast, I always ask our guests for three practical things that our listeners can take away and use and implement right now to help decrease harassment in the workplace. So in your world of organizational change and leadership and conflict resolution, what's one of your takeaways?
Sure. One of the takeaways would be that many organizations, particularly in Ontario, but beyond, have harassment policies, which is a good thing to have. The problem is a harassment policy without the companion policies that go with it is often not enough. And those companion policies, well, I think of them as four. There's the overarching policy, which is a code of conduct. And underneath that overarching policy, there's these three other human dynamics policies. One is the harassment and discrimination policy. One is the conflict resolution policy. And one is performance management policy. Mm. And if we don't have all three of those, we will have a tendency to send things in the wrong direction. Or down the wrong channel. So I'm thinking about a workplace that I dealt with a number of years ago where they had a harassment and discrimination policy, but they didn't have a performance management policy and they didn't have a conflict resolution policy. So somebody had concerns about another person's performance. The manager of the department wasn't quite sure how to deal with it. And in fact, when the employee who felt like he was being targeted by his colleague about his performance, when he wanted to deal with it, HR said, well, we got the harassment policy, so there you go. Mm-hmm. And so then everything went through harassment and discrimination, when in fact it was a conflict. It was a conflict and it was a performance issue, or it could have been a performance issue. And so I've seen it the other way around too, where things end up in the conflict world when they should be in the harassment world. And so in a healthy organization, these three policies, harassment, performance management, and conflict, they should stand sort of side by side to one another, and then they should have crossover points. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes things start with conflict and end up in harassment. Sometimes they start in harassment, end up in conflict or in performance. And we need to be able to crisscross between these policies, and we need to know when is something a conflict, when is it harassment, and when is it performance? And sometimes it's all three at the same time. So then what's the right policy to start with, given the dynamics that we're facing? Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense. You are making so many of my investigations so much clearer. I find that a lot of them, it's like, if you had just had a culture of healthy conflict resolution, it never would have gotten to this point. But because that's not there in the culture, because people don't know who they can talk to when there's conflict, especially if the conflict was somebody above them, yeah. Like they don't know how to have those tough conversations. They don't know how to have that conflict or to resolve that conflict with somebody above them. And if they just don't know, then it just becomes silence, 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 take it in, take it in, take it in, health issues, stress issues, blowing up, harassment complaint. Yeah. I'm like, if you had just had a culture of this is how we deal conflict within this organization, it never would have gotten to that point, because people would have had the courage to come forward much earlier and at a time when it wouldn't have gotten to harassment. So, yeah.
Which maybe if I can just add to that. A lot of organizations live, I'm borrowing now from Patrick Lencioni, who says 80% of workplaces live in artificial harmony. Mm. And I think he's right about that. If we don't have a culture of good disagreement, we're going to end up in conflict. We're going to end up in performance management issues, and we're going to end up in harassment discrimination issues. We have to nurture the capacity to disagree well, to step out of artificial harmony. And see, the opposite of artificial harmony is mean-spirited personal attacks. Mm. Those are ends of the continuum. But you know, if I am engaging in public artificial harmony, you know what's going ahead inside my head. Inside my head or with my buddies, it's mean-spirited personal attacks. So artificial harmony is public, mean-spirited personal attacks is private. And we ricochet back and forth between those two until we can't ricochet any longer and something explodes. Mm-hmm. And if we had had the capacity for healthy disagreement, we could have, or even conflict, we could have been able to take it down that channel first rather than ending up in harassment, discrimination, or performance management.
Mm-hmm. I love that artificial harmony. What a great thing, like just a great concept, artificial harmony. And it's like, and I see it all the time. It's like, I can't say no to him. He's my boss. Right. And it's like, no, you want your employees to be able to say no to you. You want your employees to be able to challenge you because that's where you're going to get the best performance. So how do you make it safe for them to stand up and say no and to challenge the status quo and all of that? So
we know that wisdom, none of us is wise alone.
Exactly.
None of us is smart alone. We're always smart in dialogue and we're often smarter in difference. Mm-hmm. And so if we nurture a culture of difference, a healthy culture of difference, we will end up in harassment, discrimination. We will end up in conflict and we will end up in issues.
Oh, this is so juicy. I feel like we're getting to like the core of where harassment comes from. It's so good. Thank you. Okay. So have a conflict resolution policy along with a performance management policy and a harassment policy. Have all three of those and be able to interchange between them all, which is fantastic. Okay. Second point. I think we're going to talk about tough conversations and how to have those.
So if we are in agreement that we need to be able to disagree well with one another, mm-hmm. and we be able to have good and healthy disagreement with one another, how do we do that? Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of things that I would say. One of them is to actually lean in. And I know that's a term that's borrowed from Zen. Well, it's a term that other people use as well. But the idea is, how do we lean into the hard conversations? How do we lean into the disagreement? And I would say I was using the term lean in long before it became the title of a book. But the idea is, I see this all the time. We tend to lean out when we disagree. We tend to lean out until we can't lean out any longer, and then we lash out. And in fact, the goal is to lean into the disagreement and saying, you know, I see it differently. I wonder if we could talk about another way of looking at this. And if we could nurture the capacity for healthy disagreement, I think we would end up with fewer conflicts and fewer situations of harassment and discrimination. So what does that look like practically? What does that leaning in look like practically? One of them is the courage to surface when we disagree. Another one is to, when we disagree, the first thing to look for is, what can you say yes to in the other person's idea? What can you say yes to in the other person's statement? I call that the yesable statement. It's a term that I made up. But the idea is, what can I say yes to in their statement? Because if I can say yes to something in their statement, they will know that I've been listening. They will feel that I'm honoring them. And if they're feeling escalated, they're more likely to de-escalate if I can say yes to something, even if that something is small, or even if that something is like, wow, this is important to you, that's still a yes. And so finding something to say yes to is one piece. The second one, which I think is really, really tough, is to withhold our perspective long enough to say, can you say more about that? Tell me more, tell me more. I once wrote a blog post on hold people accountable with tell me more. Because if you say tell me more, a couple of things happen. Most people's differences or their strong opinions hide behind generalizations. If you say tell me more, you're spending time listening to their perspective, you're building trust, but you're also asking them for details about why they think what they think, which is a form of accountability holding. So we say tell me more, tell me more. So first, lean in. Second, find the yesable. Third, tell me more. Get them to talk about their perspective first. The more they can talk about their perspective, the smarter we will be with how we respond to them. And only after we've done those three steps do we say, with kindness and humility, I think I see it differently. Or I wonder if I could offer another perspective. And then we can share our perspective. Now, not every conversation follows those rules. Not every conversation will have time for, or the other person may not want to tell you more, right? Like there's a variety, you know, there's ways of flexing these, but every time in my experience, every time I lean into disagreement without spending time listening to them first, I realize I'm disagreeing about the wrong thing. Mm. And if I would have spent time listening to them first, I probably would have been able to articulate my disagreement more effectively. Plus, they would have heard me better because they know that I've listened to them first. See, a big part of healthy disagreement is trust. Mm. And most people won't trust us and won't trust our wisdom, whatever we think our wisdom is, until we've spent time listening to them first. People want to be honored before they'll talk or before they'll listen.
You have such gems. That is such a great formula for a difficult conversation. And it's so great because with the tell me more, I'm doing that all the time. And I teach that too when I'm coaching clients. I do remediation coaching. And I'm like, one of your like superpowers is just to stop and ask, tell me more about that. And yes, I love that we're so on the same wavelength because it just really, it also has me put my ego aside.
Totally.
Right. Totally. Which is a lot of what gets in the way is I need to be right. I need to be right. And it's like, if I just stand and tell me more, it's like, I can actually put that aside and then be with the other person.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I feel like I teach this stuff and still I can get caught into, I'm so excited about my perspective. I just want to share it and realize, oh, if I had said tell me more first and really listened, I probably would have shared differently. The other person could have heard better. And I think I would have been more on point with my mm-hmm. perspective if I had understood them better first. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those are really juicy. Remind me again, what are the four steps? So lean in,
find the yesable.
Find the yesable. Yes. Okay.
Find the yesable statement that you can say yes to. Thirdly, tell me more. Get them talking. And finally, share your perspective.
Yeah. I think I see things differently, or can I offer another perspective?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Right. I like the, can I offer another perspective? Cause you're actually asking permission to disagree.
Exactly. Yeah. It's consent. It's consent conversation. So, find the yesable, lean into the conversation, have the courage to do it, find the yesable, ask questions, tell me more. And then finally ask for permission to disagree. And that sounds funny to say it that way, but to say, I wonder if I could offer another perspective.
Yes.
And when a person says yes to it, you know that you've built a foundation of trust on which to launch your perspective. And then you can share quite openly. I guess that would be the fifth stance.
Yeah. Oh, that's so, so good. I want to ask you in the very beginning though, I'm putting myself in those situations when a difficult conversation needs to come up. And I know the fight or flight response kicks in. So like that whole leaning in, like that courage, it can be physiological. Like it's like for me, when I'm hit with, you know, I don't agree or I'm being attacked or something, I tend to hide and shut down and I go quiet. And so do you have any tips to like overcome that, to like for that lean in, for that courage?
You know, I am a big believer in self-talk and sometimes that self-talk comes through mantras. And one, you know, it's just getting yourself ready to have, you know, that hard conversation. And one of those ways of getting ready is practicing self-compassion. Mm. It's okay to be frustrated by the situation, right? Sometimes it's self-compassion. Sometimes it's compassion for the other or regard for the other. One of the things that gets us stuck is that once we've turned a conversation into conflict, we have a tendency to regard, let me say it this way. If you and I are in conflict with one another, there's a problem we're trying to solve. But once it goes from being a disagreement into a conflict, we tend not to think about it as a problem to solve. Mm-hmm. Instead, we tend to think about it as the person is the problem. And that happens with harassment and discrimination as well. He's a jerk. She's awful. He does this. She does that. They do this. They do that. And we turn a problem into a person, the person's problem rather than the situation being the problem or the policy being the problem or the problem being the problem. And so how do we manage that? One way of thinking about it is to say, well, what's the problem as a problem? And trying to figure out what the problem is or what the situation is, that is one strategy. And it's a really important strategy. There's a saying to go, in conflict that says, turn people problems into situation problems, and then you'll be able to solve them. What's the situation? What's the dynamic? What's the problem we're trying to solve? Let's figure that out. That's mm-hmm. one way of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's another way of thinking about it, which I think takes us to a deeper level. And that way of thinking about it is, well, let me borrow for a moment from Carl Rogers, who was a psychologist in the 20th century. One of the things that he said is if when a client came to him for therapy, if he regarded that client through the lens of judgment, the client would respond with resistance. Mm-hmm. But if he could regard them through the lens of unconditional positive regard, all things were possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think about this with respect to our work as well. How do we nurture capacity for unconditional positive regard for the person that we're about to have the encounter with? Like if you think about the challenge of leaning in, part of what keeps us stuck or part of what gives us that fight or flight mode, it puts us into that fight or flight mode is the fear that the other person is a monster in some way, that the other person wants to do us harm. Or we've developed this notion of the other as being unworthy or being wrong or being bad. If we can remember to regard the other through unconditional positive regard, even while we set boundaries, and this is where people often get stuck. They think it's either unconditional positive regard or boundaries. But in fact, it's both and not either or. If I'm only doing unconditional positive regard, in a way, I'm being kind and permissive. If I'm only doing boundaries, I'm being honest, but brutal. Mm. If I'm only kind, I'm permissive. If I'm only honest, I'm brutal. How do I do both of these at the same time? Unconditional positive regard for the person and boundaries for the relationship between us or how we manage our relational dynamics, right?
Yes. So this is definitely your third point. I love this of unconditional positive regard has to go hand in hand with boundaries. So I think you've explained the unconditional positive regard well. Can you talk about boundaries? Everybody has a different label around boundaries, and it's kind of it feels like it's like a really popular thing to be talking about right now is boundaries. So what in your world do boundaries mean?
Sure. Can I say one more thing about unconditional?
Yes, absolutely. Sorry.
No worries. It's just because it leans into boundaries.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is I don't need to, if I hit you, you have full permission to say, Betty, that's not okay. And behind my hitting you, there's still a person, right? And each one of us is desperate for being honored, for being valued. There's a personhood, a humanity, and a kernel of goodness in every single person. And if all I see you through is the lens of badness, that kernel of goodness will get very defensive and say, but I'm really a person of worthiness. And that sounds so trivial or so childlike, but we know that what turns people from disagreement into conflict and eventually into harassment is that something inside feels defensive. Something inside doesn't feel honored. And so we know that beyond the bad behavior or the challenging behavior that somebody's presenting with, there's always a kernel of goodness in that person. Mm. And how can we lift up and honor that kernel of goodness even while we hold the boundaries around whatever's not working? And so the reason I say that these two are so connected is unconditional positive regard is for the person's personhood. Mm. Boundaries is for the person's actions. And I think we need to hold those two a little bit separate. And so what do I mean by boundaries? It's unfortunately, our culture doesn't seem to have a good word for accountability, boundaries. All of it sounds very judgmental and harsh. And what I'm driving towards here is the ability to say, that's not okay. Or here in this workplace, we speak well to one another. We speak honestly and in our honesty to one another, we do not put each other down. Mm-hmm. We do not engage in mean-spirited personal attacks. Like, you know, those are the kinds of boundaries a leader might put in place. Or if somebody is in a workplace context, discriminating, kind of a joke that's discriminatory in some fashion or another, it's appropriate for the leader to call that person in and say, in our workplace, jokes like that are not okay. But, if I am the leader in that case, and I call you forth and I say, I call you into a meeting with me and I say, jokes like that are not okay. But I do it in a way that puts a hammer over your head and doesn't honor your kernel of goodness at the same time, it will take you to a place of shame. Mm-hmm. And that shame will likely take you into a place of defensiveness rather than to a place of learning. Like Brené Brown says, shame is I am a bad person. Guilt is I did a bad thing. And so if I can take her quote and translate it to what I'm saying here, guilt is I'm holding boundaries about what happened. I'm trying to get away from shame and into unconditional positive regard, mm-hmm. right? At your core of your personhood, there is goodness that I'm wanting to lift up, and I'm wanting to address the action that took place. So how do I address the action that took place and address it and maybe hold boundaries around it, while at the same time honoring the kernel of goodness that is true and alive in each person?
That just seems like magic. That's so great. Cause I can just see it totally laying down the defenses of the person who's being reprimanded for the inappropriate joke. So, but really speaking to their humanity and where they're coming from, and this behavior is not acceptable.
Yeah, exactly. And we can do this, you know, I'm thinking about an employee that this is going back a lot of years who I needed to call in for a disciplinary conversation. And I began by saying, I want to be really clear about my intention. My intention this meeting is to make sure that we get on the same page. I have your back. I really value you as an employee. And we need to talk about what happened the other day. Mm-hmm. And I, when that employee left my office, I could see that his head was held high and his shoulders were still up. And I thought, right. I wanted him to change a certain action he had taken and behavior that he had followed. At the same time, I wanted him to feel honored. Mm. And, you know, that's a tricky both and space to be in. And, you know, one of my strategies there was to be really, really clear about my intention, mm-hmm. you know, maybe going back to our four steps before, with that leaning in, being really clear about our intention with them and with ourselves. Mm-hmm. Am I calling this employee in to shame them? Or am I calling this employee in to really work with them towards a better future? Mm-hmm. If it's the latter, then I want to be able to articulate that and to be really clear about my intention so that they don't go away thinking, oh, she thinks I'm terrible, right? Mm-hmm. If people feel honored and respected, even while we hold them accountable, the possibility of change behavior is profoundly enhanced. Mm-hmm. Now, doesn't work with everybody. We have people where it's not going to work and where departure from the system is the right answer. Mm-hmm. This is not a Pollyanna moment. Mm-hmm. And it is also true that change is possible.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Wow. So many golden nuggets today. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Betty. It has been such a pleasure. You are a wealth of information. Thank you for your time today. Thank you for what you do in the world. I can see it's really appreciated and definitely needed in our world today. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. How can people get a hold of you if they want to work with you and bring you into their organization to help them and their organizations get better organizational health? How can they get a hold of you?
Sure. That's a very kind question. And you can reach me and my colleagues through our website, which is www.credenceandco.com, credence with C-R-E-D, not double E. Some people spell it like Credence Clearwater Revival. No, it's C-R-E-D-E-N-C-E, credenceandco.com. You can also Google my name, Betty Priest, P-R-I-E-S, and you'll find us there.
Wonderful. And we're going to put all of that in the show notes as well. So you can check the show notes to find out Betty. Again, thank you so much for being here, Betty.
Thank you so much.
For those listening, please subscribe, please rate and review. That is like gold to podcasts. If you click that rate and review button, it helps us with our ratings and more people will find out about us. So thank you, listeners, for listening. Welcome back to season two. More episodes coming soon. And again, thank you, Betty. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for joining us for the Harassment Free Workplace podcast. Subscribe now wherever you listen to podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. And please spread the word. Feel free to send us feedback, questions, and suggestions for future guests you'd like to hear from. We'd love to hear from you. For more information on workplace investigations and assessments, please visit www.harassmentfreeworkplace.com. Until next time.